Juan Mir was a three-year-old the last time Suzuki won the MotoGP World Championship. 27 laps in MotoGP coming up right now. Lights out in Valencia. Good start there from Franco Morbidelli, but here comes Jack Miller on the Ducati, and surely he will lead.
Hello and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 651. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, and joining me as ever is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, dude?
It's crazy. It's hectic, especially considering the fact that I'm like in the refrigeration business. If these two drugs that need to be kept for the vaccine for the COVID have to be kept at minus 70 degrees, I'm going to have a whole hell of a lot of work to do.
Also, what you're telling us is that we need to find out if your company is publicly traded, and if it is,
I'm not going to tell you who the company is, because I'd be in breach of some serious non-disclosure agreements that I signed. So, you're not going to find that out. Sorry.
Yeah, I have to deal with all of that too, with all of our stock stuff at work. So people are like, "How's it going at work?" It goes. I mean, here's some articles that I can send you from what's said on CNN. I mean, take it as you will.
That's about it. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
we travel. We're not allowed to travel in anything that has a company logo on it.
Oh wow!
Go figure that out.
Yep. Well, that is interesting. All right. So,
All right.
This week we are going to be covering round two from Valencia, or as it's more formally known, round 14 of the MotoGP calendar from Valencia. But before we get started with the show, Jim, it's been real busy at work. Like I was telling you earlier, it's like I got off of a call and got onto the podcast. It's just been crazy. So today I certainly need a beer. And this, Jim, this one's going to be a good one because I have with me, had barely any fizz. That's not a great sign.
What was that? That was
And it smells
like you build a motor, and the first thing it does, it turns over and goes kunk, 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 kunk. It's like, that's not bad. That's not good sounds.
So it smells exactly how I thought it was. And I have.
Like hops?
No, it's a little skunky, and I thought it might be because it just has this look to it, and it's the Estrella Galicia Cerveza Especial, which I thought was fitting that we'd have a beer from Estrella Galicia since they're all over MotoGP. So let's give – I feel like this is going to taste exactly like a Heineken. Let's see what this tastes like.
He slowly raises the glass to his mouth. Look at that approach. Slides down, and he gives us the official wipe. What is it?
Whew. That's a maybe it won't get finished by the end of the show kind of beer.
Wow.
That is very much it's either a Heineken, or you know what it reminds me of? There was a beer back in the day. It came in a green bottle. It was a green, blue, silver. What the heck was that? Rolling Rock. It tastes like Rolling Rock beer.
Oh, that's, God.
Yeah, exactly.
I have horror. No, now you're giving me PTSD. I have some really bad college memories that are associated with Rolling Rock.
That's only the place you drink it. That's why it took me so long to remember what it was, because that's how long it's been for me. But this is what it reminds me of. It reminds me of Rolling Rock.
So real quickly, just to give you the idea of the story, because I can't just leave it hanging out there. One, I walked out. I couldn't walk in a straight line. And two, when I hit my couch, I had to put my foot down because I thought I could stop the world from spinning.
Ooh,
let's just leave it at that.
I've had a few of those myself, but this is not that kind of show. We only encourage responsible drinking on this podcast. Sometimes we don't follow.
I am the only one who's responsibly drinking. I have a cup of nice green tea with honey in it.
Oh, there you go. So hopefully your voice stays. I feel like mine, like I said, I just got off of an hour and a half call where I was doing most of the talking. So if my voice goes out halfway through, Jim, you're just going to have to jump in and take over all the way to the end.
I'll wing it.
All right. So we do have a little bit of listener feedback. And Jim, why don't you go ahead and tackle this one?
So Scott Baldwin has written into us, and he's talking about returning from injuries for MotoGP riders. And he writes, Wayne Rainey was obviously still concussed from the crashing at the last race when he went out and ended his career by crashing at Misano. Now we may lose Marquez. Derek Quarterly got his hand caught under the bike while crashing at Laguna. He told doctors to cut his mangled little finger off and then tried to race the next day. Back in the day, the culture was used to riders and car drivers dying all the time. These days, people, including me, are less accepting of the idea that mangled bodies and fatalities are a part of motor racing. all the pro racing organizations need to implement a forced medical leave policy. Of course, each decision will be judgment call, so the authority person needs to be a widely respected member of the paddock. So I wrote back to Scott. I said, you know, Scott, thanks for writing in, and I appreciate you doing this, Scott. And Skylar and I think you and I have been pretty much a champion of this, as we need to save the riders from themselves. And it's a pretty deep topic. When we're near the end of the season, we only got Portimao to go through. So what we think we're going to do here, Scott, is we're going to take a little bit of time, kind of formulate some thoughts, and actually have a podcast at the end of the season that is only us talking about this specific issue. I think it's an issue that we need to try to champion, that we need to try to get behind and try to get some kind of momentum to try to, you know, help save the riders. I mean, as you said, it looks like Marquez has had a bone graft. That's why he's taking so long to recover, because they've actually grafted bone in to fix the problem that's in his humerus. And given what we saw in some of the crashes that happened this weekend at Valencia, it's just there isn't enough time right now with the next race for us to really get into this, because we're going to get talking and we're not going to stop on this one. And so if you'll just indulge us a couple episodes and we'll get it in, and we'll hopefully maybe can get some really good data, pull it together, and maybe hopefully find some experts who know a little bit more about this than we do and get their opinions, or maybe even try to get them on the show too. So Scott, thanks for writing in. Everybody else, be prepared. There's going to be one of these shows that's going to be nothing but this, so stay tuned.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's like you said, Jim said, those kind of discussions require some critical thinking. So we need to look at it from both sides, and the good and the bad and pros and cons. But we'll get to that in a later podcast. Remember, folks, if you want to write into us, you can do so just like Scott did. We are Motopod at motopodcast.com. You can shoot us one over. It goes to all of the hosts. Sometimes you get just one of us. Sometimes you get all of us. And sometimes we'll throw it on the show, depending on what the topic is. But go ahead and send them in, because it always gives us good talking points. It's great to hear from you folks, and we do appreciate it. Alrighty.
So, please, guys, send us anything that you think should be done to save the riders from themselves. Rule suggestions, medical ideas, anything. We want to know, because we want to put together one really good show about this. So your help is going to be required for us to do it right, because we need your input and feedback. So please write in motopod at motopodcast.com.
Also, to not single, if you have an opposing view to all of this, yes, please write in as well. Both sides, we want to hear it all. You can only formulate a good idea if you hear from it all. So let's do that. Okay. All right.
News.
Jim, it's time for news. And there's some news. Good ones. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off.
All right. So the first thing I found in the news is that Cal Crutchlow will be a Yamaha test rider for next year.
Yay.
Welcome back, Cal. I mean, hey.
I mean, honestly.
Next best thing, right?
I think this is what Yamaha needs, personally. Oof,
I agree, because Honda values Cal's feedback.
Yes, yes. And if there's one person that's going to tell you how it is and how the bike really is doing without having to worry about feeling like there's going to be some pressure that someone's going to come chop off their head.
Oh, that's Cal.
They got the right guy. So.
Oh, yes.
I think Rossi had made mention of that, too.
That's true. Second bit of news. Jorge Lorenzo is being linked to the Aprilia ride, but then again, who hasn't been linked to this ride, quite honestly? I think everyone who doesn't have a ride has been linked to it.
Yep.
I mean, they've even said that they were going to go outside to the World Superbike paddock. So it's believed that even Chavs Davies, who doesn't have a ride with Ducati next year, will be on the Aprilia, possibly in the MotoGP paddock. Yeah, I would like to see that. I rate Chaz as a pretty decent rider, so more the merrier.
I mean, I see that. They had talked about, I think, Bezzecchi bringing him up, DJ Antonio bringing him up to that seat. You know, all of that. I think, you know, for those guys, probably I might wait. And if you want to go see how it is, go talk to Sam Lowe's about the Aprilia seat. Maybe not the one you want to jump up to in MotoGP. Maybe go the Yamaha or privateer Honda Ducati team before you go ahead and try to jump over there. Man, because
we are talking about a MotoGP contract.
I know.
How many times have you sat on this show and you told us that when that offer comes along, you sign that offer? Now you're saying don't take it because it's Aprilia? How many of these beers have you had already?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it's talking out of both sides of the mouth, right? where are you going to go? It's a real risky one. It's probably the riskiest one that you have in that paddock, because If you go there and fail, they'll just say it's you. And if you go there and do well, and the bike's, then you can say, oh, it's the bike, or maybe it's you. I mean, you have to lift that team up. And then from the comments that are made from Aleix Espargaró, when he was talking about, like, Jorge Lorenzo coming over and then, like, having the younger guys, he didn't make a good comment on any situation. I feel like he's just, like, taking, like, anyone coming to that team personally against him or something. And it's kind of like, all right, well, that kind of gives you a little bit of headspace on where he's at. And when you come into that team and, oh, well, I want to do it my way kind of thing. It's like, okay. I mean, Aleix has a lot of experience, but, I mean, that bike is where it's at. So I don't know, man. But anyway.
Well, are you ready for a bombshell?
Yes.
Are you ready for something that nobody saw coming?
What's that?
GasGas will be a Moto 3 motorcycle. Yes, GasGas, the people that's like trials off-road bikes, those people, that GasGas, yeah, they're going to build a Moto 3 bike. In fact, they've built a Moto 3 bike, and it looks pretty doggone cool. It's bright red. It looks cool as hell. The team is going to be managed by Jorge Martinez Aspar team, so it's going to be an Aspar GasGas, and they will officially be ridden by Sergio Garcia and Aizen Guevara in the team. So that's interesting. I mean, you got a different player. So now you're going to have KTM, GasGas, Husqvarna, KTM, and Honda. So that mixes it up. It's like, I didn't see this coming. I never would have ever thought that GasGas would build a road race bike and go road racing, especially at a world level like this. But there they are. Now, maybe somebody's going to call right and say, hey, no, they got a motor, they got a road race bike, and it's in a CV class somewhere in CEV somewhere in Spain or something like that. And it's a 50cc or something like that. I don't know. I only know of them from their trials and dirt bikes and stuff. But KTM has showed that you can, that guys who are experienced at building an off-road bike can build a bike that goes fast on the road too. So I think that's going to be really fun to watch next year.
It definitely adds a bit of variety to the Moto 3 class, which right now is a KTM Honda show, and getting that mix in there, it adds a little bit more variable and something else to look forward to next year for sure.
Definitely something different. I mean, why not? I'm not gonna argue with them on it. Hey, right. You want to spend your dollars in MotoGP? I am all for that. Thank you very much, and please come again. Build two more.
Now for something different, but kind of the same. Iker Lekwana, he will not be at the Portuguese Grand Prix because he has contracted COVID-19. His replacement is a name that you haven't heard in a while, probably, but it's gonna be Mika Kallio. And sure, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. Who else are you going to kind of find on short notice for the last race of the year? I mean, you get who you get at this point, right? You got to bring somebody on. But definitely kind of a bummer for Lekwana with one race to go. It's like, oh, now you got it. It's like, oh, so close, man. You almost made it the whole season. Womp womp.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I was just trying to hold out for a vaccine and I didn't make it.
Right. So, I mean. It happens. What are you going to do?
It happens, man. It's like, it's everywhere. It's absolutely majorly massively contagious. Ooh, let's see. So that's a last bit of news that's out here. We all know that Jake Dixon had a crash in qualifying or FP3 for Moto 2. Can't remember which now, but he broke.
I want to say it was FP3. I don't think he made it to qualifying.
I don't think he did either. So he wound up falling off. He fractured his right wrist. He had surgery on it in the UK last Friday, but he will miss the last round of the season in Portimão, which that's going to stink because Dixon's been riding really, really well. I mean, he was so close in the Mons. He really kind of turned his season around there. They found something. He's gotten comfortable on the bike. There's really, you know, really sad end to what's been a very good season, but he's got to ride for next year. So look for more good things to come from the Brit.
Yeah, you know, it is a bummer that we don't get to see him finish up this year, especially he is on an upward trajectory for sure. But next year, he's on the same bike, and when the confidence gets back to him, he's got time to heal, which is the most important part. If we haven't made that, if we haven't drove that home enough this year on this podcast already, but he has time to heal.
We will in two episodes.
But that's good. So, hopefully Jake, you know, the surgery went well and he's all healed up and ready to fight next year, because it'd be great to see him back out there giving it his most just like he was. All right, Jim. And that takes us into the racing. I saw the qualifying for MotoGP. That's it. And then I watched the other two races kind of I'm going to be feeling, I've got some pretty good notes on the races, but qualifying, I'm going to suck. So
it doesn't matter. I got qualifying for you.
Power on through it.
We'll just do. So it was like a deja vu moment because when they started Moto 3 QP1, it was spitting rain. Valencia, what do you expect, right? Especially this time of year. But what was interesting is the world championship leader, Albert Arenas, was in that Q1 session, which shows you how competitive Moto 3 is. And if you get it wrong by just a little bit, you're not going to be there. But he was joined by some other big names. Foggia was there. Binder was there. McPhee and Rodriguez were all in that same qualifying session with him. It seemed like it was one of those iffy kind of things on the track with the rain flags. Rodrigo and Rossi both fell. They were able to get right back up. The rain flags were waving everywhere around the track. Arenas was in, and then he went out with Slicks again with like 8.5 minutes to play. Foggia went down. Then at the very end, basically Arenas, Rossi, McPhee, and Binder all make it through that session to get into the QP2 session. So the QP2 is a race for the pole. It's all dry now. And we were halfway through. We had Agura, Suzuki, Tobo, Fanati, Anshu, and Arenas leading the way with half the time gone. Great to see Agura actually having a good qualifying session. The kid needed to be sure that he kept the pressure on Arenas. And he's kind of cool because he really definitely showed that he didn't really suffer anything from the mind games that Arenas tried to play the weekend prior. But when it came down to the very end, because the track was sort of drying the whole time that that qualifying session was going on, it was who was really going to be the last guy to go fast thing, and it was Darren Binder. He took the pole, and then followed by Toba, Fernandez, Masia, Minho. Arenas qualified sixth. That is about his normal qualifying position. Interestingly, Agura started in seventh on the row behind him. Then Suzuki, Vietti, Antonelli, Anshu with a really good qualifying to be 11th. And then Yukikuni, Arbolino, who was, I thought Arbolino was a little far down for that, but that's where he was. He was down with Fanati, Alcoba, McPhee. Again, a terrible qualifying session for him. He was down 16th, couldn't make anything happen. Then there's your Australia Galissi guys, Sergio Garcia, and then Ricardo Rossi finishing out the qualifying from Moto 3.
Oh, I'm just kind of looking. So, like I said, I didn't get to see qualifying. I didn't really pay attention when the grid got started because, again, qualifying really doesn't matter for Moto 3. And I'll kind of look at the names on the list, and I'm like, ooh, it kind of doesn't. So I know how the race goes, like, oh, yeah, that there's some names that they're going to come up. Yep. All right. And that gets us to the race, Jim.
Yes. So Toba got a hole shot on everybody. He led going in there, but it didn't take too long for Binder to get to the front. Binder goes to the front no matter where he starts, whether it's the front row or the last row. The kid's going to be in front at some point, which is probably why Akio, or he's going to Petronas, thank you. I just went blank there for a second. But as it started out, it was Binder, Fernandez, Toba. Arenas got a good start. He was there in front. Arbolino with a rocket ship start. I mean, we know that Honda's fast, but good Lord. And then he wound up. Did they have a hole shot device on that by chance? I don't know. We'll have to check. Thought they were banned on those Moto 3 bikes. Then Suzuki, Minho, and Agura. Suzuki took a turn at the front, and then Toba crashed at turn 5. And then I'm sitting there going, how did Binder miss that Toba high side at turn 5? Somehow, you know, Toba just gets on the gas, the back end steps out, off the high side he goes, and Binder misses it. If you watch it, I mean, I watch it from onboard, I watch it from offboard, I watch it every which way, I'm going, how did you do that? Because honestly, it was like witchcraft or magic that got him through that one. Maybe he just closed his eyes and went for it, I don't know.
I think he just got on the gas right when he needed to, and a little bit of luck that the bike didn't collect him because it was close, very close.
It was very close, yeah. So that was interesting. Fernandez now took his normal position at the front, which we've seen before, and guess what? There's a little bit of a gap between him and the rest of the field. Ooh,
right.
This sounds like last weekend.
How about this? At this point, Jim is checking to make sure he's not watching the same race once again.
Yes. Jim is checking to make sure he's not watching the same race. That is true. Jim didn't make sure of that. But Jim did something different this time. Jim just got up really early in the morning, got a nice cup of tea, sat down, and watched it live. So Jim couldn't screw it up this time.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah, I know. I'm an early riser, so I don't mind. So being up at 5 in the morning to watch Moto 3 is not crazy for me.
Anyway. Yeah, I was up early too, but I had the meat sweats because I had Korean barbecue the night before, so indigestion, and then I was watching F1, so, and then I fell asleep again.
Okay. I was going to say, the F1 put you back to sleep, didn't it?
No, I watched it all, and then it's like I had been up, I think it started, I was up like, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, I think that race started, and right. then, yeah, by the time it finished, I was like, I think I should go back to sleep now.
Yeah, that's true. Pretty much, It was Fernandez. He wound up putting a gap out there on Arbolino and Masia and Arenas. Arenas is hanging in there, always in that top four, top five kind of area. That's where he rides, as we've seen before, most of the races. Then you had Bender in there. Then Vietti crashes in turn 11. Then Rodrigo and Lopez go down at turn 14. Now, I thought that those two guys kind of went down together, but in the replay, you see they just both sort of simultaneously fall off, which is pretty cool if you can do that. Fernandez had at least a 1.8 second lead on Arbolino and on Garcia and Arenas. Anchu was a big mover. He had moved himself in to be right behind Arenas, which is probably the best ride that the Young Turk has had all season. But I think they know Valencia as a track pretty well, don't they, Skyler? I know his older brother, when he won his race there a couple of years ago, they had been running there before. So it's a track I think that the boys like. So that always means something good. Now, Agura had slid to eighth at this point. So I was sort of on an Agura watch to figure out if he was going to come forward or not. Things pretty much stayed the same until we got down to about 6 laps to go. For by no fault of his own, Fernandez was basically getting caught by everybody else. He was getting caught by the pack because nothing was changing. Everybody was riding in the line. Nobody's cutting each other off. They were making ground on the guy out front, which is what they should be doing. So by 6 to go, we only had Fernandez out front by 4/10 of a second, followed by Arbolino and Garcia. They were coming. Now, they had separated themselves a little bit from Arenas, Anchu, and Bender, that little pack. And then Agura had slid back one place to be ninth. So Arenas is looking good to extend his lead in the championship, but Agura's definitely keeping him honest at this point. So then it's still with 4 to go. It's Fernandez, Garcia, and Arbolino. They have now caught Fernandez, and the race is on here with 3 laps to go. It's still the same guys. The only thing that's happening is Fernandez has gone back to the front. Well, he's still been in the front. But Arbolino and Garcia are now starting to change places. And it's like, guys, you can't do this. You're going to let Fernandez kind of slide away from you again. And that's not going to be good if you want to actually get this win. Then with 2 laps to go, Arbolino gets by Fernandez on a great pass. Garcia is now third. Arenas is fourth. Then Bender. Anchu winds up going wide at turn 1. That ruined whatever charge that he had going towards Bender and towards Arenas because of being out there wide. But but Arbolino holds everybody off to win the race and put 25 points in the bank. And if he hadn't been sitting close to somebody who may or may not have had COVID on a flight back to Italy, this boy would be right there in the championship hunt, guaranteed, because he had to sit out a race that he definitely probably would have finished in. And he's the only guy who's finished every race that he's raced in for Moto3. So there's not a DNF for Arbolino anywhere this year. Garcia takes second. Poor Fernandez goes to third. Now, after winning his first race, he's still on the podium in third. He's still looking good. Fernandez has got to be probably, what do you think, Skyler? Odds-on favorite for next year to be Moto3 champ, would you say?
I mean,
there's a lot of guys there, but you never know who's going to come out. But it seems like he's the guy to beat right now, you know?
Right. And the way that he runs his races, too, I mean, he gets to the front, he can put in those laps. He's learning his race craft. He's going to learn how to manage the tires a little bit better. But he's also learned how to pass this year. He's definitely a scary, and he's super young, right? What is he?
Oh yeah,
17, I think.
I think he's. I thought he was 18, but still young. Still,
right. Either way,
incredibly young. Yeah, yeah.
But you know, same. Pick a side of the same coin there. But sure. Yeah, he's got to be a championship favorite for sure going into next year, along with
Bender might be.
Yeah, I was saying Darren Bender. I'm trying to think of a few other guys.
Can you put the consistency together?
It's tough because I really thought like this year he showed that he's got all the tools, but now it's up to if he gets in between the ears correct. He's fast enough. His racecraft is there, but it seems like he's had those hit or miss weekends, and I think that's kind of just down to the rider. Mm-hmm. not being able to get around issues. So if he can get around that, maybe this year really put a, a bit of a stick in his craw. And the Petronas team throughout and throughout has had a very up through all categories has had a very up and down year. So maybe next year, it'll help out with that. But still though, Fernandez, the way that he's looking very Lorenzo-esque. And yes, if we've learned that from the past, he's going to be a very dangerous individual moving forward.
Yep. All right, so let's round this off real quick. Our championship leader, Albert Arenas, finishes fourth. Bender, fifth. Anshu, Minho, Agüero finishing in eighth, gaining another point. Then Masia, Alcoba, McPhee, Fanati, Nepa, Antonelli, and Yamanaka rounding out your points getters for this round. That takes us to the championship standings for Moto3 with Albert Arenas on 170 points. Ayagura is on 162 points. Oh, and did we mention in the news that Ayagura has been promoted to the Moto2 team next year?
Dude, so weird.
On to Asia?
So sometimes while we're doing the show and Jim's on
things
one
happen.
Of his longest talk, I pull up articles just to make sure we haven't missed anything, and I just literally opened up. I was gonna say, oh, before we start Moto 2, we should mention Ayagura got promoted. So, all right, well, perfect timing, Jim, as usual.
As usual. Then Arbolino at 159. Boy, if you give him 18-20 points, that's dangerous. He's right there with Arenas, right?
Mm-hmm.
But COVID season, what do you expect? Then Masia, Vietti, who probably will be in contention for next year. Fernandez, McPhee, Bender, Suzuki, and Rodrigo rounding at the top 10 in the championship. Anything else from the Moto3 race that you would like to add?
Arbolino had a hell of a race, and it was surprising to see this is his first win in over a year. I was like, oh, wow, it really has been long because he's just a consistent front runner. If he's sticking around in Moto3, he's definitely another championship contender as well.
I thought he had a deal to go to Moto 2.
I feel like he is, though. I'm pretty sure we talked about that way
I'm pretty sure
earlier
it was, yeah,
in the
long
season.
Ago, because it was like we were like sort of like, he's going there? Well, he is a tall, lanky kid, so we kind of just left it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't remember what team it is. Right now, everybody's yelling at us, going, hey, he's on this team, you idiots. Yeah, I know. We should
maybe.
Know, but we don't.
Maybe. It's been a long season. I think everybody's a little burnt up. Who's going where? What the wait?
Hey,
part
these
of our
back-to-back-to-backs are tough.
Yes, yes. This winter...
Everybody.
This winter, the off season, we will definitely go back through the lineup and be like, okay, here's where everybody's going. Okay, recap. But
yes, recap.
I know we got to do another one of these shows next week too. Oh, I got to
do.
Yes,
we do.
I have to do it from the road. I just realized I better take my stuff with me because I'm going to be in San Diego. So
yeah, you might want. Yeah, that might be important.
Yeah, I'll have some time. We'll kick it off in the hotel. We'll do like an hour, but Jim's going to have to do the editing. It's going to be on Jim this time.
Jim can do it. Jim doesn't care.
He doesn't care, but it's just usually you have to add it into your schedule now. Most times you're just like, cool, do the podcast, and then I go and swear my way through all my computer issues, and so now Jim's got to do it. So hopefully yours goes smooth and much smoother than mine because the amount of swear words that I've said about my computer and the programs lately – even for this show,
I
would be distasteful.
For a new iMac because this thing is junk. But anyway.
Right?
Anyway, there's a Moto 2 race. Let's see.
Oh, that's right. Motorcycle racing. Duh. And so, quick question before we start the Moto 2 stuff. Oh, no, we got to go through the qualifying. Then, before the qualifying, I'll ask you this question. Or after the qualifying, ask this question.
That's fine. We can do that. All right. So, let's see here. Trey, where is my Moto 2? My Moto 2. Oh, yes. Here we go. Moto 2, QP1. Baldassare, Gartho, Martin, Luthi, Nakagami, and Kennett all in that first qualifying session. Halfway through, Martin was going to advance with Gartho, Kennett, and Baldassare. At the end, it's Baldassare, Martin, Simone Corsi on the forward racing MV Agusta, and Luthi going through. In the QP2 session, we're told that Sam Lowes was going to ride. Now, Lowes crashed pretty damn hard at, I think, turn 8. He went down. It was kind of reminiscent. This was an FP3. It was kind of reminiscent of Marquez's crash at the beginning of the year in Jerez, where the front tire sort of gave him a good clot as they went through the gravel trap together. It wasn't so much I don't think it was so much a concussion as it was that it kind of got his right wrist. He definitely Rose was going to have some trouble with that. And when he got out of the gravel trap, from FP3. He was definitely holding his wrist and not necessarily moving it. He did try to flex it there at the end, which made for some hope, but he was definitely going into this qualifying session banged up. Halfway through, DG Antonio, Garzo, Corsi, Martin, and Bowman Schneider are there along with Baldessari. Then as it gets to the end, suddenly, wham, Manzi goes to the top, right, with a second left, beating Garzo, Bezecchi, DG Antonio, Martin, Ramirez, Schroeder, Baldessari, Bowman Schneider, and Luca Marini for your top 10, with Simone Corsi finishing 11th on the other MV Agusta. So this was like the first pole for MV Agusta, and I forget what they said, but was it since 76 or something, I think they said? Something
I was
going to
say probably definitely before I was born and even much further back than that. So
So it was just pretty amazing they just been working hard at it, and they kind of kept their head down, and they were rewarded with a pole. So it was hopefully to see that kind of transfer into the race.
Right. So you already answered my questions. I was going to ask how Sam Lowes got injured, because I missed qualifying. When they got to the race, they were kind of explaining like he was far back and he's going to ride through the pain. And I was like, whoa, I missed something important. This is affecting the championship for sure. So that was a bit of a bummer to see that, you know, he was injured with two rounds to go and the championship being so tight. But Stefano Manzi, where the hell did that come from?
I have no idea. You know, Simon Crafar even asked them, you know, hey, what do you think of this result? And they're like, well, you know, we've just been trying and trying. And at Aragon, we found something and we've been slowly working our way, making small adjustments since we found that little bit. And we've been gaining. So we're hoping to have both bikes in the top 10. You know, that was what they were saying. So, you know, obviously they're finding something with the chassis. Who knows? Maybe they have a different shock or something that they're using now that has given them some ability to make some changes that make the rider comfortable. And if the rider's comfortable, he'll go fast. So I got the impression that they were almost shocked as well that they were as fast as they were. It could have been one of these things. It was just the guy who wanted to risk the most in the conditions that were there. It was hard to say, but I'm not going to take anything away from what Manzi did. It was pretty much an incredible lap that he put in to get there. I mean, it wasn't by much. It was 13 thousandths of a second. So, good grief. Garzo could have simply upshifted a half a second or, you know, a tenth of a second too soon. And that's it. You know, that's just the margin we're playing with. So all fair play.
So that gets us to the race. So in Moto2, Bezecchi ended up getting the whole shot, but Mir beat him to the apex of turn one. So these guys cannot stay away from each other on the track. Very much rivals in Moto3. They kind of patched up Moto2, but honestly, we've seen what race it was when they were slapping each other. Oh, Aragon, when Mir kicked his bike, they're still not the greatest of friends. They just respect each other, I think, a little bit more on the track. At this point, my notes I was writing, is that Stefano Manzi in second? Remember, I had not seen qualifying, so I put, is Stefano Manzi in second? I was like, only in 2020. I was like, that just makes perfect sense. You'll have everything and anything. Bastianini at this time was having a good battle with Marcos Ramirez down at ninth, but he needs to be careful because you don't want to be duking it out too hard with guys that have nothing to lose when you're leading the championship, because you can get caught up in something that you don't want to be caught up in. Luckily for him, though, even though he was, you know, being in ninth isn't the strongest position, his closest rival, Sam Lowes, is back in 22nd, and he was trying to, you know, work his way around the pain with that wrist injury. At this time, Bezecchi had regrouped and made his way back to the lead, and then mentioned earlier, why you don't want to be messing around too much, Marcos Ramirez actually ended up crashing. I think he started to have a bit of a technical issue because he was sliding back rapidly all of a sudden right there in the announcers, and then about 2 seconds later he wadded it up in a corner. So I'm not quite sure what happened with his bike, or if, you know, something was going on, or he just kind of got the red mist off of a couple bad moves. But
there wasn't a good video of it to analyze to say this is what happened to him. He just basically, we see him tumbling in the gravel trap. So not sure what happened there either, but again, like I said, you don't want to be in the back of the pack, that's for sure.
That's right. Hector Garza was on the move. He was setting fast laps, and he was making his way towards the front. And it was kind of one of those things like, where's this been all year? And he was, you know, now you're starting to see it. And then, unfortunately, after that, we lost to Stefano Manzi. And then I put in my notes a very cheeky comment. It's like, but we might have seen this coming, right?
Alex, I was going to say, well, the only thing you could have done better is you say, well, only if Fanati was on track with him. But geez.
Oh, my. For those that you that know. All right. So at this point, Lowe's is actually starting to set fast laps in the back despite the injury. I think he got warmed up. He really gritted his teeth and showed that he was able to push through it. Unfortunately, because it was qualifying position, it was going to be very hard for him to make up a lot of points. Martin was starting to lose touch with the top three at this point in the race. Jorge Navarro, he was having a good race. He was making his way towards the front. And then he did what Navarro does this year. He crashed. And that is 7 DNFs that he has this year. Buddy.
Half the races, right?
Seriously. You need to
That's
have
just a, not cool.
an off season. Reset your mind. You've got speed. But man, you got to stop crashing, bud. Because, I mean, you don't want to be you don't want to get put in that same lump of Desportes, okay? Let Randy be the crasher. You don't want that, you know. Sam, you said that crasher. Now you're kind of that crasher. You know, go talk to Sam Lowe's. Go talk to him. Ask him, hey, Sam, how do you get your confidence back and stop crashing and get to speed? Because that guy knows how to do it. Go talk to Sam. He'll straighten you out. All right. DJ Antonio, which is like my favorite name to say. Which is really weird, right, Jim? Because I can say DJ Antonio all day long, but then I get a Celestino, and I'm just like, what has problems over here? I don't know. But anyway, DJ Antonio, he was looking very strong. He was, you know, was going to pass. He made a pass. He ended up making the pass on lap 6, ran wide in turn 14, and gave it back up to Bezzecchi. So we're like, okay, the race is on for the front. Gartho was starting to slip back at this time, so he might have burned up his tires, catching the guys at the front. Aaron Canet spits it down the gravel. With about on lap 22, and now it's really, really tight at the front. DJ Antonio ended up taking the lead again, but this time he was able to control himself after the pass, kept it going, spits it out. Martin, because of all this infighting at the front, was starting to suck back up to the front too, so now they're closing back up. DJ Antonio, though, buddy, you had just a couple of corners left in to get your first win, and you crashed at turn 6 from the lead on the last lap. Oh, yep. That hurts.
Yeah, heartbreak. Heartbreak.
Ooh.
Heartbreak.
Yep.
That one stung.
You can go talk to quite a few people in the paddock this year that have had heartbreak. I don't know. Go talk to Quattro, Nakagami. I mean, how many guys you want to list here? They've had some really tough times this year when it comes to racing and things that happen. Definitely not the one that he will want to remember. But Martin had an amazing last lap, made the passes when he had to. He got by Bezzecchi when he needed to. Bezzecchi ended up trying to come on the outside. I think it was turn 13. Got a little squirrely. Didn't make it into the final corner where he needed to. He was out of position. Gartho was kind of slid under him, and then it was drag race to the finish. Mir gets the win with an amazing last lap. The last 2 to 3 laps of this race were amazing, Jim.
Oh, yeah. For all the stick that we give Moto2 for not necessarily being that great of a race, yeah, the beginning of this stinks, but those final 5 laps are absolutely barn burner laps that you've got to watch. Like, I wrote here, too good to take notes. Because it's like, no, I had to stop and start watching because this was just, you just didn't know where it was going to go because you thought DJ Antonio had this one covered, right? And he tosses it away. You're like, crap. Well, that makes Bezzecchi kind of check up. Martin just goes, right on by. Okay. Ooh, Martin's out front. And then you're like, okay, what's going to happen here? And you're looking for Bezzecchi trying to ride around the outside of 13. You're going, no, you can't do this. There's no grip out there. And then he does. And then Martin just sets it up, gets it out there. And, you know, great race. Great, great race for these guys. Probably, I'm going to go with probably, if not the race is over in Austria at the Spielberg, at the Red Bull Ring, I would say this one was probably number 2, maybe, other than that, the Martin race where he had the win taken away for track limits, which scared me because Martin had a track limits warning somewhere with about 10 laps to go, 10, 9 laps to go, somewhere in there. He got a limit for the track warning, and I'm thinking, oh crap, we're going to be in the same thing again where he's going to be in the last lap. He's going to touch some green paint, and somebody's going to say no, and they're going to take this race away from him, but they didn't. So, fantastic race. All, you know, congratulations, Jorge Martin, man, just putting it together there. Going to be interesting to see what that boy does on a Ducati, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
MotoGP.
There's a whole lot of talent.
Some talent. There's no question about that.
So that leads us to the championship. Bastianini has a 14-point lead over Sam Lowe's now heading into the final round. Luca Marini in third on 176, just 4 points out of second place. So Luca Marini can actually easily catch Sam Lowe's if Sam hasn't healed up too much to grab second place in the championship. I don't know how much that'll mean to Marini considering he led so much of the championship this year. It'll kind of still feel a bit of a probably a failure on his part because it's all kind of unraveled. He's got to be careful, though, because his teammate, Bezecchi, is only 5 points behind him. So really, second, third, and fourth, I mean, there's still a lot to play for. First, unless Bastianini has an absolute dismal weekend or race, he's probably got this in the bag. Jorge Martin is in fifth on 150 points. Some 40 points clear of Remy Gardner, who's quite a ways in front of Nagashima, Robert Schroeder, and Vierge.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Bastianini has the title because all he's got to do is basically ride inside the top five. And he's because I don't want to really say this, but I don't think Sam is going to be healed enough to race at the front.
No. I mean, we've seen what you got to bring to the table to race at the front this year. And we've seen it from Sam too, right? It is 100% no mistakes, and he can't run 100% right now. His wrist is definitely banged up, and you're going to get injured, and then you had to race, and then you have to turn around and start riding again in 4 days, 5 days.
I mean, you can do a lot of wonderful things with some of the therapy techniques and ways to reduce swelling and everything. They claim it's not broken, but then again, we know that x-rays and broken bones don't happen. You know, you get up from the gravel trap, you go to Clinica Mobile, they give you an x-ray, and how much time has elapsed? Basically, what, 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes before they do an x-ray? And we know that sometimes it takes a little bit of time for the x-ray or for the break to actually, I'll use mature because I can't think of any better way to describe it. And we know it's a day, 2 days later that you look at back at it and you say, yeah, that's actually broke. Here's the crack.
Yep.
So
I saw that this year with George Kittle on my 49ers, yet another injury to the team, but they said, oh, he broke his foot in the game, took x-rays. Nope, there's no broken bones. Then Monday, we took x-rays again. Yep, there's a broken bone. See you next season. All right.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like I said, the swelling's got to go down, and sometimes a broken bone, that might actually be the least of the pain. You go out there and pull some tendons or screw up some nerves, I mean, that's going to be even worse. So just because it's not broken doesn't mean it feels great.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, hopefully Sam doesn't have the dreaded scaphoid bone, hopefully that isn't the one that got nicked.
Right.
I mean, you know, because that's hard to see in an x-ray to begin with, let alone find a crack in this little kidney-shaped bean. I don't think that he has a lot more movement in his wrist than I've seen, you know, from other people who have had broken wrists or scaphoid bones that have been broken. And he had there's definitely a different playing field between Sam Lowe's and my buddy who I ride dirt bikes with, who he broke his scaphoid bone, right? I mean, we're at a different playing field, but it's like, yeah, my buddy, when he broke his scaphoid bone, he really couldn't use his hand at all, period. So hopefully Sam will be able to, you know, reduce the swelling, train a little, you know, do some therapy, and hopefully he can make a run at it, but we won't know. And you know, I think it's kind of works to his disadvantage a little bit too, going to Portimao, just because of the uphill downhill. I mean, the way this track goes up hill, downhill, left hill, right hill, and then it's going to be a tough track on everybody just physically because it's just what it is. And I'm not going to try to count Sam out. He's had a great season, and honestly,
you know what?
He would have been deserved
for the sake of the championship. We should, because I feel like we jinxed him. Period. We said he was going to do all this great shit at the end of the season. He crashes, and then he gets hurt in the next race. Shit. Like, we did this to him. So, yeah, okay. Sam's going to do nothing.
Let's get a we're sorry card.
We're
going to
reverse this karma. We're just going to say he's going to do nothing at Portimao. He's going to have a bad weekend. That's what we'll say.
So Sam, if you win the championship, you owe us big time, pal.
There we go. All right, anyway. So that moves us into MotoGP. And the qualifying, Jim.
Qualifying, yes. So in the first qualifying session, we find Rins, Quartararo, Brad Binder, Petrucci, Dovizioso, and Raindrops. Again, Jim is thinking, is he watching the proper race qualifying session? Did he turn on last week's? No, did not. But you had Rins, and you Rins and then had a massive high side, Alex Marquez. Well, I was thinking Alex Rins.
Yeah, you got Alex, your Alex's
I wrote
mixed
Alex
up.
In my yep. in my notes. So it was actually Alex Marquez had a massive high side. He literally looked like old school 500 seized coming out of a corner, like on that half throttle kind of thing, and just whoom. He looked like somebody took like a matchstick and flicked it. He was gone. He went up to the moon, came down absolutely like smack dab right on his ass. And I saw MotoGP had it. Matt Oxley had a tweet on it. He sustained 23 Gs on his tailbone.
Great. That's going to feel good in the morning.
That one's going to hurt.
Yes.
No matter how you put it there.
That's going to hurt until next season. I kid you. Probably, I've bruised my tailbone.
Dude, I'd have been on the couch going, I want my mommy, my blanket, and sucking my thumb. And the boy gets up, walks off, and says, where's my next bike?
Right. Then he started trotting. I was like, oh, adrenaline's a wonderful thing.
That's what we need to do. We need to be the, we get somehow figure out how to legalize adrenaline. We'd be even better.
Explode your heart.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. But it was right in front of Bender, man. I mean, it was, Bender had a front row seat for it. It was incredible.
I think when he came back to the pits, he was kind of, his eyes looked a little bit bigger. He's like, oh, shit, yeah. That was crazy. Yeah. Yep.
Bender, after the first runs, it was Bender and Quartararo who were at the front. Rins needed to find something if he wanted to get to the front and get into the second qualifying, because he was going to need that if he wanted to try to do anything about stopping his teammate from being world champion. But Bender and Quartararo make it through. Rins would have to start 14th on the grid. This is what shows you. This is just how competitive MotoGP actually is. And we are in a truly golden era. And if you don't believe me, go back and look how some of the years in between before you had the old golden era of basically the late 80s, early kind of 90s, when it was Australians and Americans dominating the scene. We get into the second qualifying session. Run for pole. Bender, they had their first runs. Bender, Oliveira, Quartararo, Nakagami, Morbidelli all looked good. About 3 minutes to go, Bender was quick. Then pole was very quick. He was there. Basically, you couldn't figure out who was going to be on pole because you had so many guys that had used up soft tires or had used soft tires because they came out of Q1 who were trying to be in front. So you're guessing like who was going to be on pole, because at one point Miller was on pole and Mir was seventh, and then Paul Sperger went to pole, and then Vinales was there at pole somewhere in all of this, and Zarco was taking a run at it, but Zarco couldn't do it. And I've got written here, it just all changed, which is pretty much what was going on. But when the dust finally settled for this qualifying session, we found out that Morbidelli was the fastest man ahead of Miller, with Nakagami being on the front row again. I think this is like three times on the trot the boy's been on the front row. Nakagami has really found something here in these last four or five races. Zarco was fifth. Zarco is number five. He was in fourth. Then you had Polisbargaro, Maverick Vinales, Aleix. Then you had Dania, Bender, Oliveira, Quartararo, and Mir was the slowest man in 12th. Here's a guy who had ultimate race pace, was on the front row the weekend before, and now him and his Suzuki, along with his teammate, aren't even close to the front.
So, interesting thing they brought up when they're talking about this, that Mir and Rins actually ran similar to almost to the exact times they did the week before. So they really didn't have improvement while everybody else did, right? This happened, I think, when we did the back-to-back at Misano as well. It was the same thing where they ended up being like high qualifying the week before, then the second week they ended up being like, hey, what happened to them? They're down in 12th and 10th and everything else. Oh, but they ran similar times as the week before. So I'm trying to look at this in two ways. Either Suzuki is the team that gets the most out of that bike right away and that's it, like it's going to get there, or they're very conservative in how they're going to make their approaches. When they know they have a good package, they're not going to make many changes to it.
I think it's the conservative side. I think that given the position they were in, and basically they had roughly the same temperatures and whatnot, I don't think they want to mess with the screws too much, because you can lose your way, right? These bikes are like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube. You twist it one way, you twist it back, and it isn't where you wanted it to be in the first place. And so now you're and you got to start all over again. So better the devil you know than the devil you don't know, especially this late in the season. And especially too, I mean, yeah, I don't think they like their qualifying pace, but they really not had strong qualifying pace at all year long. Where Suzuki has been good, they have been good at race pace. They have been the guys who've been able to save the tire, work on the edge of the tire, and have been able to run very fast, very consistent laps all season long. So why change that strategy when it's been working for you? So, I mean, I you know, if I'm looking at it, if I'm Mir, I don't think I would want to touch the bike.
Why would you? It works.
Right. It's working, right? You just won last weekend.
Yep.
It's probably, you know, and you're probably thinking that this is the best motorcycle you've ever raced on. Why are you going to change it?
Especially when the championship's on the line, too.
I mean, there's too much at stake to try changing it. Now, earlier in the season, they probably should have. But then again, Suzuki's philosophy the whole time with this bike has been very small, very incremental steps forward to getting to where they are now. They had the one mess up in 2017 with the crank weight where they took too much off of it. I think they took too much off the crank. I could have it backwards. But they messed with the crank. And so they went, whoa, not doing that again. And they went back to, again, a very small incremental style of making improvements. And I think that's what they're following. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. We've been at or near the front come when the checkered flag's out in every race except for the first couple of races. So let's not change anything. And I think that's where Davide Brivio has been instrumental. He's not let them get away from what they're doing. They've been focused on what they're there for, and this is what we're going to do. And that's what a team manager does. That's what a team leader does. He keeps everybody in control and doesn't let you get too low. He doesn't let you get too high. He keeps you in the middle. He lets you maintain your focus on what you're doing. You worry about you and what you're doing on the bike. We're not going to worry about what the Hondas are doing or what the Yamahas are doing or what Morbidelli is doing, etc. We're going to focus on us and do the best that we can with what we have. You do that day in, day out. And that's how you win championships. So why not?
Why not? So that brings us into the race. Miller ended up getting the whole shot, but he ran wide, and Morbidelli gets back by him. He gets out to the front, and that's probably the last time that he wasn't in the front of this race. His teammate, however, Quattro, he kind of was trying to make a slick move there into turn two on the first lap, and where he was wanting to put the bike, there was other bikes, so he had to jam on the brakes and barely missed his next year's teammate, Matt Vinales, and a few other riders, and ran completely wide, ended up blowing his whole race up before it even started. So then he was back to the back of the pack. Zarco ended up crashing out turn one on lap 6, and then the other Frenchman on the field there, Quattro, crashed out on lap 9. His championship was over last weekend, but not mathematically now his championship is done when he laid it down the gravel.
Did you see that first lap of Quattro threading the needle between Mir and I think Espargaro in front of him?
Mm-hmm.
It was like you were coming like 900 miles an hour. What were you thinking?
I have no idea.
Like that one doesn't even register for me. Like, I mean, that's like a club racing thing that you misjudge how slow everybody's going to that corner and you mess up the concertina effect. Like that's kind of what that move reminded me of, because I've seen so much of it. When I was racing club, you know, people would make a mistake like that. You go to Daytona for the first time, they will tell you, hey, if you when you think you need to put the brake on for the chicane, guess what? It ain't going to work because you're still going to get sucked along in this draft. And, you know, everybody kind of boo-hoo-haws and scoffs at it. But it's true. You the first time you do that, you pull it and it just, the bike keeps going because of the draft. I mean, that's what it looked like. Like, where have you been all year, Quattro? I mean, don't know, man, but that was like a really – I mean, thank goodness he didn't take anybody else down, which was, you know, the best thing that could have happened. But wow, something had to have been wrong. And I wonder if they had like the wrong tire pressure in the front of the bike again, which seems to be Yamaha's forte. They seem to not have the right tire pressures for some oddball reason. And I'm like, I don't know if they did that and he had like no feel or what it was, but that was just really weird at Quattro. And then for him to finally just, you know, toss it into the gravel trap there, it makes me think that they had the same problem that they've had previously, and that is they didn't get the tire pressures right for whatever reason, and there was no front end grip in the bike. Or they were trying something to create front end grip that didn't give them front end grip. I'm not sure which way it is, but it was very weird.
Right. So the race ended up kind of filtering into monotony at this point. Miller, though, was starting to wind up. He was starting to run Morbidelli down, who was out at the front, who had been setting fast lap after fast lap after fast lap. It would be just super consistent. I mean, of all the Yamahas, his actually looked like the one that has been working for the last half of the season. Taka Nakagami had a ton of pace over Paul Espargaró, was running him down, running him. He got by him, then immediately crashed out of the final corner with nine to go. Threw away another podium at that. It's like, oh, Taka, you got too excited, buddy. Like, you had tons of pace over the guy. I don't think he needed to make the move that he did, and down in the kitty litter he goes again.
Like for all the progress and all the hard work that Nakagami has put in this year, a guy who is deserving of a podium, the podium was on offer. You simply didn't have to make that move at that time. You had pace on everyone. All you had to do was sit back, wait, use the Honda horsepower on that straightaway, take him going into turn one, or be close going into turn one, and make the pass into two.
That's right.
I think he's got the setup, and I think he's got some confidence now. He needs to work on his own brain power and think about racecraft.
Yeah, I think that'll he'll get there. This has been an eye-opening year for him. He's got the, I can do this. So now he knows that. Now it's the, how can I do this consistently? So he's got to work on that part of it. Jack Miller, he was, like I said, he was starting to run down Morbidelli. He ended up actually taking the lead into turn one onto the last lap. And Miller and Morbidelli were going at it, though. This is the point where I actually stopped taking notes. I had to rewind it and go back and take the notes, because if you were looking away, you were missing it out. I mean, you were thinking, okay, Miller got by him. Morbidelli's got nothing. Morbidelli had saved himself 2%. He had some moves. He ends up stuffing it back up, I think, on turn three there. Gets back around Jack Miller. They have a very nice, like, close going back and forth. But in the end, Morbidelli gets to the finish line first, grabs the win, but he wasn't the man of the weekend, because it was Mir. Juan Mir gets the championship. And ladies and gentlemen, we have our first champion in the MotoGP paddock of 2020.
Whew. Yeah. I mean, you can't fault Mir. The boy rode from 12th to 7th. Okay, he gained 5 places. He had Nakagami kind of gifted him one place, because I think Nakagami was really the only person who was ahead of him. Quattararo screwed up at turn two, but he didn't fall off. So I think that was the only place that was really gifted to him. But the thing of it is, the people who needed to be in front of him or around him were nowhere to be found from the championship. And it's consistency. If you look at it, the most consistent guy in MotoGP was Mr. Mir, and he is a deserved champion.
Right.
Can't deny it.
Mini fast.
No, there's going to be no asterisk around this championship. Sorry, there is none. No. If you want to put an asterisk there, that's your own problem. It is not based on the racing. I think this schedule has been difficult. I think it's been difficult to keep yourself healthy and not get a coronavirus test that's positive, so you couldn't race. Look at poor Arbolino. He was sat next to somebody on a plane who may have had it, right? And so, Mir did probably more to win this championship than what most people will understand or know, let alone riding well, let alone being consistent as well. I mean, you brought Suzuki their first championship in 20 years, and they probably are going to wind up with the team's championship too. So,
yep.
I mean, hey, the kid's a Moto3 champion. He's the first one to be a Moto3 champion and a MotoGP champion. Great things to come, huh?
Suzuki's,
bring on next year, man. This kid's awesome.
Suzuki's up for the Triple Crown right now, aren't they? Team,
yeah, I think they are.
Manufacturer, yeah, and rider, yeah, championship. Damn.
And they're doing it with only two bikes.
What a season. Yeah, because Alex Rins, he's still in a shot to grab second in the championship. They can go 1-2 in the championship this year.
That would be awesome.
I would have not put that money down at the beginning of the season.
I would have never said that Mir would be champion.
No.
Then again, I never would have thought that Marquez would be in the hospital.
I would have listened to your arguments for Rins, but not Mir.
Yeah, I would have listened to those too. Yeah.
So anyways, let me just, the race results here, just in case you're wondering anybody else to finish. So Morbidelli first, Miller second, Paul Espargaró had a nice race on the KTM. Get KTM another podium. They've had a great season as well. Let's not forget that they came into the season thinking, oh, yeah, we get a top fives on the regular. We're happy. How about some podiums and some wins and some pole positions? They'll take it. Yep. Alex Rins, he salvages his right there in fourth. I say salvage because he just didn't look like he was there this weekend, especially after qualifying. But he gets a nice fourth-place finish to keep himself alive for second place in the championship. Brad Binder in fifth. Miguel Oliveira in sixth. Joan Mir, like I said, mentioned in seventh. Dovizioso in eighth. Espargaro ninth. Vinales 10th, followed by Bagnaia, Rossi, Crutchlow, Bottle, and Petrucci. And that covers your race results. Let's bring us down to our championship. Like I said, Joan Mir, he is now the 2020 MotoGP champion. Second place is Franco Morbidelli. He slides up into second place with his great win that he had in Valencia. But he is only 4 points in front of Alex Rins. So it's definitely going down to the wire. Winner take all in Portugal for second place. Matt Vinales, he's a bit distance back there in fourth in front of his. So he's basically going to be battling out for his teammate of next year, Quartararo. They're separated by 2 points. And Quartararo is actually tied with Dovizioso. So Dovizioso can actually finish fourth in this championship. Actually, he can finish. He can actually almost finish. He can finish third.
Yeah, he can finish third, but he can't finish any more than that.
No, no. Which would be ridiculous.
No, he could. But he definitely, if he wins, it'd be 25 points. So he'd be on 150.
Oh,
and if Morbidelli didn't
score
points, he could be second, which would be shocking. But
It's 2020. Why not?
2020, why not? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
no one knows what's happening in 2020.
Yeah, so that places 3 through 7 can all be changed out very easily, and even Jack Miller can get in that mix a little bit as well down at 8th. Nakagami's probably pretty much where he's going to be at, back kind of in the 8th-9th space, and Miguel Oliveira there in 10th. So, but a 25-point swing for any of these guys here will put them in about 3 to 4 positions, so it's still a lot left to fight for here this weekend. And now that Joan Mir has nothing to lose, is he going to go out there and send it, or is he going to go watch everybody else? We'll see how it goes. But I am certainly looking forward to Portugal for many reasons. One, it's Portugal. That track is amazing. It's the first time we get to see MotoGP on it. And it's the last race of the season. I'm ready to wrap it up, Jim.
Yep. I will say this. I'm going to go on a limb and say Miller wins.
Ooh, I would love to see that. I would love to see. He's earned it this year.
I think Porto Tamayo is a track that requires you to have some serious balls, and I think Miller's got it in spades.
I mean, it could very well. It could work very well for the Ducati there too. There's a big horsepower straightaway. There's some big horsepower corners, but there are also some corners that, like you said, require some balls that are blind corners, very traction. So this track kind of gives a little bit of everything. It'll be hard to pick one out, but Jack Miller in the form that he's in, I wouldn't put a bet against him to not win this as well, Jim. I mean,
it could be great because that would be, what, 10 different winners or
that's
something.
That's right, and that would set the record.
It'd be awesome.
Right, 9, and that ties. So it'd be great to see that. All right, so like I said,
let's wrap it up.
Upcoming race, Portimao, last race of the season this weekend. Don't forget to tune into that. Remember, folks, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. We also have the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. We are also on Twitter @moto_pod. Follow us there for any news, announcement, and general banter. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
At MotoRGV, Instagram, and Twitter.
All right. Well, another week down. Man, it seems like just not that long ago, we couldn't wait to get this season started. Now we're kind of like, all right, we're ready to have it be done.
it's the triple back-to-back. It's all the back-to-back triples that are killing us. You know?
Yeah, those are brutal.
They're tough.
They are tough. But, you know, it's a great problem to have, Jim.
It is a good problem to have.
So, all right, everybody. We will see you next week. Take it easy out there. Practice your social distancing. And we'll see you then. Zoom, zoom.